The idea that we lose ourselves in the presence of our partner is deeply ingrained in the modern perception of love, particularly in the United States, as almost all of our communal institutions give way to a heightened sense of individualism. We look more frequently to our partner to provide the emotional and physical resources that a village or community used to provide. Is it any wonder that tied up in relying on a partner for compassion, reassurance, sexual excitement, financial partnership, etc., that we end up looking to them for identity, or even worse, for self-worth? Esther Perel.
Mic drop.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multi-Amory Podcast. On this episode of the Multi-Amory Podcast, we're picking back up with part two of What Makes a Relationship Inspiring. So in last week's episode, we started this conversation talking about some writings from Esther Perel about how to maintain a sex life in your relationship, and also some stuff from Simone de Beauvoir as well about autonomy and the importance of that in your relationships. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back and check that out from last week. And then this week, we're picking back up by talking about two incredibly important things in relationships, one of which is mutual respect, and the other one is a sense of self.
Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to delve back into this.
It's been a long time since we've had a two-parter episode.
I know. Yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah, like, it's very rare for us, but we just kept talking and talking, and we're like, the hour's almost up,
and
we have not finished even remotely, so maybe we need to do more of this. But yeah, again, last week we were talking about Esther Perel and Ira Glass on This American Life when they were discussing that it was very difficult for them to find relationships that inspired them. And Esther Perel was going to write an article on inspiring relationships, but ended up not doing it because she really didn't know what that
she
was.
She gave up.
She was like, I couldn't do it. And nobody figured out what that was. So we decided to do it for her. And here we are.
Yes. So let's just jump right into it, I guess.
Yeah.
So our first topic to talk about today is about respect. So this one, I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with Mark Manson. He's a writer. He does a blog. He also wrote the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I'm a big fan of his writing. I actually haven't read his book, but I like his blog quite a bit. But he got married a few years ago. And right before he was about to get married, he put out a question to anyone who's been married for over 10 years and is still happy in their relationship. What lessons would you pass down to others if you could? What's working for you and your partner? And if you're divorced, what didn't work previously? What would your advice be? And it's funny actually that I, when I was in college, one of my first like really serious college relationships where I was thinking about, you know, marriage and all that sorts of stuff.
Marriage.
I'm kidding.
Marriage is
I just
great
love
for,
that that's like a punchline of a joke for Emily.
Marriage God. Is great for people who want to do it and who are in it. And good for you.
Yes.
It is really funny to me to think of you getting married, Jace.
Oh my God.
You, talk
you
about,
were engaged
like, the
at
fact 23. That you were,
I was, yes, I know.
Oh, it's so nutso.
But what's interesting is that the question that I asked of my dad, and you know, my parents have been divorced since I was around eight or nine. And I asked my dad, I was like, so, you know, dad, this is the relationship I'm in and these are the things I'm thinking about. I just kind of wanted to know, what's your take on like what not to do? Sort of like,
you've screwed it up before, dad. Tell me how to not do that.
And it was interesting that you know, part of his answer was just about just wait a little bit longer than you think you want to before doing
He's
something.
He's like, don't be 23.
Yeah, basically.
Because wait, wasn't your dad 23 when he like had you?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was conceived when my parents were 23 and then they were 24 when I was born.
Can you imagine? Dedeker, we'd have like a 6-year-old right now.
Yeah.
No, if you and I collectively had a child at 23.
My kid would be like 11 or 12 right now.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah. Chase, you're so old.
I know, but God, he or she would be the cutest kid ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
Yes, it depends on who you procreate with, really.
I'm sure it would be an adorable child.
Yes. But anyway, but we want to talk about what it was that Mark Manson found from these responses that he got for this.
Yeah, so he goes over a lot of different things in this blog post on what, you know, people need to do in their relationships in order to have long-lasting, awesome relationships. And it's interesting, I think over 1,000 people actually wrote back to him.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
And so the thing that he said was that he started to see a lot of themes come up. Obviously, even over 1,000 people, there were things that kept coming up over and over and over again. So one of them, and I think that he cited it as the most important thing in a relationship, even before something like communication, was respect. I mean, he says, respect goes hand in hand with trust, and trust is the lifeblood of any relationship, romantic or otherwise. Without trust, there can be no sense of intimacy or comfort. Without trust, your partner will become a liability in your mind, something to be avoided and analyzed, not a protective home base for your heart and your mind. Which is really interesting.
That's interesting because there's a part of that that seems to contradict some stuff that
Esther Perel
talks about.
I know. I hear you.
Which is this idea where it's like, yeah, trust is important. And of course, that comfort is important. But if that's all that's there, you're not going to want to have sex with that person anymore, essentially, is kind of the argument that she makes.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we want to get super, you know, text analytical about this, you know, what he says here is that without trust, there can be no sense of intimacy or comfort. So essentially saying that you can't even find that middle ground because if you don't have respect, you don't have any of that at all.
Yeah.
I find that respect is something that more and more, like especially since learning a little bit more about this, like more and more I see is such a big difference in relationships that, you know, I've had that I've been happier in, you know, compared to ones that I haven't been, as well as other people's relationships when I see them, you know, being happy or not, that like respect is such a big part of it.
Yeah.
Of just kind of like, do you trust your partner to make good decisions? You know, do you trust them? Do you like it? It's like, I guess I'm using the word trust, but I feel like it comes down to respect. Like, do I respect you enough to be someone who, you know, is in control of your own life and your own mind? Or do I think of you kind of like a child who can't make your own decisions and they need to be made for you and you need to be controlled?
Oh my God. I mean, I've definitely noticed a pattern in myself. I mean, this was mostly my pre-polyamory days, but I noticed that definitely in long-term relationships that as soon as I lost respect for the person, like as soon as I started to get into that of like, I don't respect the decisions this person makes. I don't respect what it is that they're doing with their life. You know, if I do start to see them as kind of like a child who can't take care of themselves, like, I mean, that's pretty much always been the turning point for me in a relationship where I'm just like, I'm checked out, you know?
Yeah.
Because you also don't want to be that person's mother. Like, I mean, I'm sure that your parents can respect your kids, but it's a different thing there. You don't necessarily trust them to make good decisions for themselves. So in that same way, I think, yeah, you can, if you start losing respect for your partner, that's really not a good thing. And how can you like want to have sex with someone that you don't respect, in my opinion?
Or who doesn't respect you.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Yeah, I think that's interesting to think about parents, because I do think there has to be this transition at some point in a relationship between a parent and a child where you move from, you know, that person who you need to kind of make their decisions for them, to transitioning to, okay, now I respect you as someone who can make your own decisions, even if I don't always agree with them. And I think that same thing can be true in relationships. And we also talk about, or, you know, one of the sort of conventional pieces of wisdom is that if you want to see how someone's going to be in their relationships, look at how they are in their relationship with their parents. Like how they're going to be in a longer term relationship. And I think, you know, there may or may not be truth to that. There's definitely things that contradict it. But I think what's interesting is just to see how many parallels there are. And we make the parallels a lot when talking about polyamory, like that you can love more than one person, just like a parent loves more than one child. And it's not like having a second child makes you love the first one less. We use that sort of parent-child analogy
sure.
to talk about love. But I think it really, I think you bring up a good point by mentioning the parent thing, because it does... Yeah, it does have a lot of parallel there of like, is this someone that you feel like you need to sort of control or shelter from things, or that you don't trust them to make good decisions, or that if they make a decision you don't agree with, that means they're wrong rather than they just made a decision you don't agree with, mm-hmm. right? Like it's...
Yeah, because you can still respect someone who makes decisions that are different from those that perhaps you would.
Right.
But... if it comes down to a point where you're like, I have no respect for this person, they are wrong, you know, and I am right, and they need to learn something or whatever, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, definitely.
Dedeker,
definitely.
You have an interesting story about this, correct?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, the first ever like meditation retreat I went on, it was kind of right when I was in the middle of a turning point in my life around vulnerability and being vulnerable in relationships. Like, I kind of had like had this epiphany about opening myself up to my partners and, you know, not being so like self-protective and stuff like that. But I kind of like swung way into the opposite direction of like being way vulnerable. And then I was just like raw and just really having a really difficult mm-hmm. time and feeling too vulnerable. And so like I brought this to like one of the teachers on the meditation retreat. You know, we talked about it for a while. But the thing is, like, the piece of advice that came out of that always stuck with me, because she mentioned that, you know, when you love someone, that it's not that helpful to think about like your heart becoming one with that person, you know, or your heart opening up and then that person comes in and then like it all melds together and, you know, all that kind of tired Judeo-Christian narrative about relationships and sex. But she said that, you know, when you fall in love with someone and when you love someone, it's two hearts that have learned to respect the other heart's solitude. And this idea of like that there's always going to be this separation there, and that's actually a good thing, and it's good to respect that with your partners. And yeah, that always stuck with me, of this idea of like, because it kind of relates to a lot of things. It's not just the respect thing, but it's also about giving each other space. It's also about letting each other be independent, autonomous individuals. But yeah, that's just always something that's really, really stuck with me since then, about the way that I look at relationships, the way that I look at, you know, loving another human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think something to realize about this too, and I guess I'm going to go back to the parent metaphor here, is that, like, you know, Dedeker, you talked about how you've had relationships where you felt like you lost respect for that person at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm thinking about, though, is something that I see happen very often that's a little bit of the other side from that, is that people will, especially once a relationship becomes more serious, but maybe even earlier on, will have kind of a lack of respect for their partner that might be just born out of what their role models were for how relationships go. A lot of times I see it tied up in gender, and this can go either way. You know, we've talked before about the sort of pop culture narrative of, you know, the husband being barely smarter than a dog, essentially. Yeah,
the myth of male incompetence.
Right, yeah. The myth of male incompetence.
When it comes to particular tasks like child rearing and house cleaning and stuff like that.
Right, that he's got to be an idiot. And so we're taught that narrative, and that you could come in with that. And on the other side, you know, we see this a lot with things like how much more often men will interrupt women just in general, or similarly kind of those cultural narratives about women not being good at certain things, whether that's, you know, mechanical things or something. Actually, one of my favorite moments in Life is Strange Before the Storm.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a wonderful game. I love it.
Now. You're not going to give any spoilers, are you?
No spoilers, but there's a scene early on in the game where the main character goes out. Her mom's new boyfriend, who she doesn't like, is giving her a ride to school. And she's unhappy
God,
about this.
I hate that scene so much. I was so angry.
She goes out and he's working on getting the car running so that he can take her to work. And he's like, oh, I think the problem's with the spark plug. You know what a spark plug does? And she says, yeah. He's like, well, you see, the spark plug does this. And she interrupts him. She's like, I said I know what it does. He's just like, oh, okay. Like, can you go get me this tool?
And then she puts together a car herself.
Which is awesome. But anyway, it's a good example of that type of thing. While in that case, it's like, oh, it's this guy we don't like. But I feel like I, looking back, have seen myself do that kind of thing. And I see it a ton with other males that I know and how they treat their girlfriends or their female friends or coworkers or whatever. Anyway, so the point here is not about those specifics so much, but that we may come in with a certain lack of respect that's just been taught to us culturally or by our parents or by other role models we've had. And that it's not like in Dedeker's example where it's sort of like you've lost respect for a person because of something, like you had it and then it's been lost. Whereas this is sort of you're coming in without it. And that, I think, is a much more hopeful place to be, because if you can realize that, you can start to change it and very actively do that. And I think that in something like polyamory, it can even come up not so much about gender roles, but just about relationship roles. This idea that you might decide to date someone who I don't think is attractive or who I don't like that much. I don't think they're a bad person. I just like don't like them. It's like it can come up there of just having this sort of respect of, okay, you're going to date differently than I will. And so anyway, it is a thing that you can learn. And I think becoming aware of it, at least for me, has been hugely important. And also just how someone else lives their life.
Yeah.
Especially when you're polyamorous and your lives, you gain more of that autonomy that we talked about in the last episode.
Which we're going to talk about in how to cultivate respect in a relationship. And
yeah.
I actually added on some stuff about the Gottman Institute. We can talk a little bit about it now, but it will come up again
Let's talk about it then.
Okay,
so let's get into how to cultivate respect in a relationship. So the first one is to have respect for your partner's different hobbies and interests. Allow them to have different friends and different perspectives on things.
Yeah, this is a big one because, again, I mean, you may like fixing cars and I may like, I don't know, dancing on the weekends or something, and the two shall never meet.
Do either of you two do either of those things?
I mean, I had my clubbing phase, and I definitely, back in the day when I was like 22, I definitely did dance on the weekends a lot. So yes, once upon a time.
And I've done.
Jason,
I've done.
Do you have your car fixing phase?
No, Jason.
I've done maintenance on cars.
Yes.
I haven't ever like fixed a car from death to life.
No, but you have like changed your own oil and stuff like
that. It's not that impressive.
It is though. To me, it totally is.
The most impressive thing I've done was actually changing the brakes on a car.
Wow, that is crazy.
But I did.
Well
done.
That is awesome. Respect points for sure.
Totally.
On that one.
But for anyone out there who actually works on cars, I know there's much
they're
more
like
to
meh.
It.
See,
yeah,
I
they're like, yeah, yeah.
Completely pull both of those out of my ass.
Yes.
Yes.
I think this one comes up maybe even more often with hobbies. That again, going back to this cultural narrative, it's the idea that, you know, one of them has a hobby that the other one finds annoying, right? Like one of them, you know, likes to collect and paint D&D miniatures. Right. And there's sort of the cultural narrative of like, ugh, like, oh, I have to hide this from my wife or whatever, right?
Because
like, 'cause I'm embarrassed about this nerdy thing that I'm into and she couldn't love me for that. Right?
For all you D&D people out there, I'm laughing because my partner is actually the like head of a D&D miniature company. So I'm not laughing because I find that not cool. I find it very cool.
Yes. But anyway, that sort of thing of like having respect for their hobby, even if it's something that you don't have an interest in, rather than kind of, I almost feel like we're taught to sort of put down those things if it's not something that we also like ourselves.
Yeah. Why is that? That's shitty.
I guess because it makes for funnier sitcoms. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's that. I mean, I think we can never
discount really mean.
The influence of the things that we see in like TV and movies. Mm-hmm. I know like so many people try to be like, oh, whatever, like, I don't watch TV movies, or oh, it doesn't affect me. But it's kind of like, I don't know, it's such a lifeblood of our culture. Like, we get so many cues from that. And especially in an absence, like we were talking about last week, in an absence of actually getting to see a lot of relationships up close and personal, you know, other than basically like our parents, maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, those things do affect so much of how we feel like we have to be in our adult relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on to the next one, another way to cultivate respect in your relationship is to come to the relationship with a sense of being a team and allowing each other's voice to be heard. And of course, this is also true of multi-partner relationships as well. Something we've come back to on this podcast a lot is this idea, particularly with metamors, with your partner's other partner. You know, the idea, like, you don't have to be best friends. You don't have to be in a relationship together, but it is important of this to maintain this idea that everyone's at least on the same team, or at least like that you work in the same office at the very, very least, you know,
at least coworkers.
Yeah, that's cute. That's a cute metaphor.
Yeah, I like that.
That we're generally going toward the same goal, that we're not, you know, trying to beat each other down and trying to compete with each other. And that sounds so simple and fundamental, but particularly when it comes to couples, you know, negotiating or working through conflict, being able to get to that sense of like, oh, hey, there's an issue and now it's us versus the issue. It's not me versus you. You know, the faster that you can break out of me versus you and into us versus the problem, you know, the faster the problem's going to be solved.
Yeah, that's great. For our next one here, we want to talk about actually a couple things from the Gottman Institute. But what we're going to What I want to start with, actually, is talking about, we've mentioned the Gottman Institute in the past, like in our episode about the science of happy relationships. And this, you know, organization does a lot of studies and things about relationships, what makes relationships last, what makes them more likely to break up, you know, what are the key things that actually statistically affect that, rather than just sort of the hearsay of like, oh, you know, these five things are sure to doom your relationship. Number four will blow your mind.
Cosmopolitan.
Sorry, I'm really into like making everything into an Upworthy headline right now, or like a BuzzFeed article. Anyway, so what I remember, like the first study of theirs that I remember reading about, was that they could listen to a couple have a conversation, and based on the words that they used in that conversation about whatever when talking to each other, could determine with this, you know, startling amount of accuracy whether or not that couple would still be together within a couple years or however long it was.
And wasn't it also, I thought it was like, it only takes them like essentially like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Right. Didn't even take that long. And
seeing the couple talk about like a particular subject or a particular, you know, maybe an issue that they fight over often, and like in a minute and a half they can tell.
And it was with like 94% accuracy.
Yeah. Like
that. But I'm pretty sure it actually wasn't even about a fight or anything. It was just like,
or was it
having an actual conversation about something? Maybe it was something where they had to.
Are you sure? Because I could sit down and have a conversation with you about some pretty ridiculous and inane things that I don't think would carry.
And then like contempt and things would come up.
No, but I mean.
Right. You know, I think it'd be more. I think it, like, if I brought up something that we've argued about in the past, then that would be more likely. Sorry, I'm arguing with you via you to the Gottman Institute, and it doesn't make any sense.
You are. We're also nicely reversing gender roles by you interrupting me.
She is the alpha. She's the alpha.
We have...
Shoot!
Someone,
sorry.
Someone did comment on one of our episodes where we were criticizing the red pill. That said Dedeker was the alpha. Which,
duh.
Because apparently I interrupt the both of you all the time, I guess.
I don't know. But their comment was hard to understand.
It happened in the last episode. I was like, I can wait.
I'm sorry. I'll try to be better.
What I was trying to say is that I don't think it's about a specific argument that that couple has had, but it was about some kind of discussion that involved some amount of debating about something. So it wasn't just like talking about what we did last weekend. But anyway, what they found is that the thing that was the main marker for whether that relationship would last was the kind of language they used about each other, about whether it was respectful or not, essentially, is what it comes down to. That did they use sort of dismissive language when talking to each other? Did they use, you know, disrespectful ways of referring to each other, things like that?
Can you quickly say what the four horsemen are again for our listeners?
Well, I haven't gotten to that yet.
Okay, sorry.
I wanted to set that up about respect. And then, so then they've also talked about these things that are the four horsemen of the apocalypse in relationships. And that there are basically four things that can happen in a relationship that basically once these things start happening, it's kind of over. Like there's not a lot you can do to salvage a relationship at this point.
So definitely contempt.
Contempt is...
Which are things like rolling your eyes or... I think it could involve, you know, like talking over a partner or mocking them, being sarcastic, making fun of them. Contempt one. Criticism.
Yes, criticism. As in,
yeah, and not like constructive criticism or constructive feedback, but as in like, you know, picking at a partner.
Personal
attacks.
Criticizing
the way they dress, criticizing the way they've done a particular task or a chore or something like that. So just kind of nitpicking at them all the time. Defensiveness slash blaming. It's kind of the... It's kind of two sides of the same coin, as in, you know, never taking responsibility for your own emotions, never taking responsibility for your own actions. Maybe that means never, ever apologizing for anything, coupled with blaming, as in always putting the blame for that on either another person or, you know, the other person that you're with or some kind of external circumstances. And then the last one is stonewalling, as in shutting out, ignoring your partner, giving the silent treatment, things like that. So they found that, you know, I think the sad thing is that all of us have done this to someone that we love at some point in our lives. And it's not great, but the idea being that if any of these become a regular feature in your communication and your relationships, it's just going to be continue to be destructive probably until the relationship ends.
Yeah. And the Four Horsemen within the Gottman Institute, they also talked about that often problems that are just systemic and they last for a long period of time and they never really resolve. That's also a big issue, that one, a problem can't be resolved and it's always there within a relationship, that can be something that potentially ends the relationship. But within all that, they also speak about how to combat that. And one of the ways, coming back around to respect in a relationship and cultivating that, is a way to combat the Four Horsemen is to appreciate your partner. And appreciation really shows that you have a deep respect for your partner and that you value them. I mean, it also allows you to cultivate this gentleness and gratitude when times get tough. When a difficult situation arises, it can allow you to not do all those things like stonewalling, like, you know, having contempt for your partner, name calling, anything along those lines, and instead sort of have more of a gentleness when you get angry with them. And I appreciate that the Gottman Institute talked about that, because I think, yeah, that also says that you respect your partner enough to be able to do those things for them in the moment.
Yeah, they do talk a lot about, you know, that doing essentially the opposite of the Four Horsemen can be really helpful and positive for your relationship. So for instance, you know, instead of criticizing, you know, just being more gentle in that, using I statements, talking about your feelings, talking about, you know, framing things that you need in a positive way rather than in a negative way that's critical of your partner.
Don't use always or never statements.
Right.
Right. Things like that. Like Emily was saying, you know, the opposite of contempt is appreciation, but they even go further to, and they say you should build a culture of appreciation in your relationship so that it's a thing that constantly happens. There's constantly a back and forth of appreciation, that's something that happens quite often. The opposite of defensiveness, I think quite obviously being just taking responsibility, you know, owning your own shit, like we've talked about on this podcast. And the opposite of stonewalling is actually interesting. It's not what I expected. I would think that it means, you know, just open up to your partner and don't shut them out. But they actually recommend
taking
time to self-soothe. As in, you know, if you do need some time away from an argument or some time away from your partner, you know, use that time to build yourself back up. You know, be respectful in like asking for that time from your partner, you know, instead of just cutting them out, which I thought was really interesting.
I appreciate that. I think my partner is very good at that because he's able to like leave a situation, do something to make himself feel better, and then come back to it like with a more open head and a better kind of understanding of maybe where I'm at or whatever. And I think that is really important.
So another way to cultivate respect is to allow your partner to feel the feelings that they're having during difficult times that are in their life or in their other relationships or in their current relationship with you. Don't automatically jump to trying to just fix your partner's feelings, but instead focus on listening. And of course, you know, that's why we created the Triforce of Communication.
Yes.
So go and listen to that episode because that's very useful for preventing yourself from sliding into that, wanting to fix things, especially if you're someone, and I count myself among these ranks, someone who slips into that bad habit a lot of automatically trying to fix things.
Mm. Yeah, that one's tough. I think it's challenging to not just want to be like, I'm going to help you right now. Or don't feel sad.
Well,
look at all
yeah.
these amazing things in your life. Like, whenever, like, I would be really down on myself, my mother would be like, I don't understand why you're so upset right now. Like, you have so many amazing things in your life. And I would, like, totally negate my feelings.
Right.
I'd be like, this is not helpful.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, I think we see it with the way we'll treat kids a lot, too. Like, a kid, you know, hurts themselves or something. It's like, okay, it's okay. I got it. I got it. I'll fix it all up. Make it better. It's like, I just need you to stop crying right now.
That's kind of like the underlying thing. It's like, this is making me feel awkward, so why don't you just fucking put a lid on it?
Yeah. But I think we can approach things when, you know, our friends or our partners or whoever approaches us with, this is something I'm upset about. It's like, how can I fix it? How can I make this go away so I can stop being uncomfortable knowing that you're unhappy or knowing that you're uncomfortable?
Yeah, but it's...
That's interesting. That's kind of an uncomfortable truth to recognize.
Yeah.
But a good one, I think, for people to understand. But yeah, the more respectful thing is to be like, hey, I hear you. I understand that you're having a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I am comfortable with you feeling your feelings right now.
Right. And offer them solutions if they want them.
Yeah, exactly.
But not if they don't.
So our last one on how to cultivate respect in relationships is to tell your partner that you're proud of them and let them know that you respect them not only in front of each other, but also in front of other people. I think that's really cool. Because sometimes, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You do hear yourself like maybe saying like, hey baby, like I think what you did today was really awesome when you, like, you know, I don't know,
what do you got?
Yeah, I was gonna say something about animals, but I was like, save that wild panda. But like, if you did that in front of a bunch of friends, that might mean a lot to them, and also like, show that you're not afraid to be really there for your partner and really complimentary of your partner in front of other people. I think that that's like a nice gesture.
Like, it's a little bit of a reaction to the opposite, because we've all seen the couple that does the opposite of this.
Totally.
At a party where they just kind of, even if it's tiny things, just like tiny digs at each other.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, or like tiny little passive aggressive comments.
I have some friends
like,
who do that. That's
oof. Yeah. It's
just the worst to be around. And I mean, as bad as it is to be around, it feels even worse to be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was
like day in and day out.
I thought you were going to go a different direction with that, because for me, I feel like the opposite of that is something that I know I have done in some relationships before, and I do this sometimes with my friends, and I have to keep aware of it, but is telling everyone else how great they are and not telling them enough to their face or telling it to them in front of people or whatever, that's one that I've found I fall into as well.
I recently, like... This maybe should come up more in the next one that we're going to do, but I said to Josh, I was like, you know, I used to, Jason, like, even Brad would tell me all the time, like, how great I was at singing or how good I was at acting, and, like, I don't really hear that very often from you. Like, I think it would be kind of nice. And so he listened to that, and he definitely, like, we were at karaoke the other night, and he was like, oh my God, you sound so amazing. And I was like,
nice,
thank you.
The power of asking for what you need.
Totally.
That's great.
Totally.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom, noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
All right, our next topic, our last topic of the four is
four great horsemen of the apocalypse.
Of the non-apocalypse.
No.
The four inspiring, okay, no, it can't be horsemen because we're used to associating horsemen with apocalypse. Yeah. Like the four inspiring
lions.
Camel riders.
Oh. Okay. I was going to go with like sprinters or like endurance runners. Like,
the four inspiring Usain Bolts of relationships.
If Usain Bolt was cloned three times and he also was there, these are the four of him.
And that he was also bringing you Usain Bolts. And he was also bringing you healthy relationships, inspiring relationships.
What more could one ask for?
This is the fourth Usain Bolt that comes across the finish line
final,
here.
The
final.
Is it
Usain?
Bolt.
Is it Usain? I thought it was Usain. Is it Usain?
I don't know.
I honestly don't know.
I've heard it pronounced many different ways.
I have
probably all wrong.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of offending him and then he'll never leave us a review on the podcast.
Right.
We
so,
love you.
This is about sense of self. So what this is that this is from Pia Skade. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I don't know.
Skade, do you know, Dedeker, which one it is?
I have no idea.
Anyway, I apologize if I've said it wrong. An outstanding love doesn't come from two half-fulfilled people coming together to make one whole, complete life. Outstanding love comes from two whole people coming together to share and enhance their already full and beautiful lives. I almost had like a British accent for a second.
Enhance. I do that too, though. It's fine.
Well, you know, I just learned that she is Australian, so.
Oh, well.
Well, then there you
I
go.
I should go back and read it again. No, I'm not.
I can't
do
a fucking Australian accent. Good luck with that.
Right.
Okay, and then we're going to go back to good old Esther, my fave. And she says that the idea that we lose ourselves in the presence of our partner is deeply ingrained in the modern perception of love, particularly in the United States, as almost all of our communal institutions give way to a heightened sense of individualism. We look more frequently to our partner to provide the emotional and physical resources that a village or community used to provide. Is it any wonder that tied up in relying on a partner for compassion, reassurance, sexual excitement, financial partnership, etc., that we end up looking to them for identity or even worse, for self-worth? Esther Perel.
Mic drop. Esther
Bam.
Perel.
Yeah. I know. She's like, boo the fucking yeah.
Well, I've been thinking about that particularly for a while now, about this like identity thing. And, you know, I think especially of my relationships that I had up until quite recently, up until just a few years ago, and how much I allowed them to shape my identity.
Oh, God. Ditto.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think we talked about this on an earlier podcast about, you know, how we even come to dating with a sense of figuring out, like, how good is this partner going to be for my status? like, how good are they going to look for my status? Because we're going into it just anticipating that we're going to kind of install this person into our identity a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you mean by status?
Social status?
Yeah.
Well,
that's,
I mean,
intense.
Well, it's interesting too, because I mean, the book that I'm reading right now has a lot of time travel in it, and in that there's a lot of talk about, you know, marrying someone for, you know, how their wealth fits into the social status, and that that's the only way to move through social classes and things like that. But I mean, even just if you think about that in more, like, I don't know, less class focused ways of thinking about it, like, you know, when starting to date someone, you might think, like, how well are they going to get along with my friends? Like, are they someone I'm going to want to bring places with me, or am I going to be embarrassed to bring them to a work function? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's, I think that's the sort of the modern day American equivalent of that kind of.
Oh, I was going more superficial with it.
Oh, really?
You know, like this idea of, like, I need to pick someone who looks very conventionally attractive so that other people will admire the partner that I have.
Mm.
You know,
interesting. Yeah. So for me, it's more about, like, I would assume it would be more about sort of skills and impressiveness in other arenas than just how they look. But yeah, I think both could be argued to be equally superficial in terms of picking a partner that you're actually happy with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with all of this, it's incredibly important to maintain a strong sense of self within each of your relationships. One's relationship can bring fulfillment, but it shouldn't be the only reason for finding self-worth. Codependency, which we do talk about on this show a fair amount, can breed from needing too much validation and praise from your partners. And it's interesting because we just talked about the importance of praising and appreciating your partners.
But there's a fine line.
I feel like this strong sense of self is also kind of related to the autonomy thing as well.
It is, I do think that they're a little bit different, because one is maintaining, like, your own personal space and your own personal boundaries, and the other is, like, being able to find validation and self-worth by yourself, as opposed to needing your partner to fulfill that. That's how I look at it.
I kind of see it as the autonomy thing kind of is more related to, like, the actions that you take separately from your partner, mm-hmm. and the sense of self is more about your own identity, how you treat yourself separately from your partner, how you view yourself. I mean, I think Emily's distinction works too, but I thought it was interesting. Anyway, how does one maintain a strong sense of self within relationships?
We have a couple of ways to do that. So the first one is going to be look to yourself rather than your partner for your own needs. I mean, have confidence that you know what is best for you within your relationship and within your life. So not like saying, like, oh shit, maybe my partner knows what's best for me. Maybe I need to look to them for those things. And this may be a subconscious thing, but it's something to be aware of, because I think that I know that in the past I've been kind of like placate towards my partner and just say, like, okay, well, we're going to do what they think is best in this moment, as opposed to me just being like, no, I have a say. I have a decision that I can make for myself, and that is just as valid. And I have enough self-confidence to say that that is a thing that I want to go for in the moment.
Well, I think at the very worst, this can result in like gaslighting, right? If you don't have the confidence of knowing that you know what's best for you, or you know what it is that you want, that can leave you really vulnerable to something like that, to a partner, either intentionally or often unintentionally stepping in to be like, well, I know what's best, and this is what's going to happen, and this is what's going on.
Yeah. I think that a way that this can look, though, on the other side is this idea that I'm unhappy or I'm feeling unfulfilled in my life. It must be because my partner isn't giving me enough, right? Mm-hmm. That I think it's very easy to fall into that trap as well. I know that I definitely have, where it's like something doesn't feel right in my life. It must be because of my romantic relationship, rather than looking at other areas or looking at myself of, like, maybe there's something that I'm not doing that I could be, or there's something, maybe not even just like that I'm not doing that I should, maybe it's not that simple, but maybe there's sort of a larger question going on about what I'm doing with my life you know, that could be causing this. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's so easy to blame a relationship for that. So I think on both sides of this, right, that this can either be something that unduly gets blame, or it could be the thing that you're giving all of the power to and not keeping any for yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Another tip for maintaining a strong sense of self, and if there's one piece of advice that I feel like comes up in every single coaching session that I have, it is to develop and maintain personal boundaries and uphold them in your relationship. I can't tell you, like, I've messaged Emily and Jace so many times talking about how I really want to create a huge, high budget, high production value, full on Broadway style choreography, like choreographed number about having boundaries that I could just perform in everybody's face to get them to get it. It is so, so important. And because it affects so many things, you know, it's things like if you're not getting enough like free time or self time or self care time away from your partner, if your partner's insisting that like you don't have any privacy, you know, if you're not allowed to have like private interactions or private conversations like with other partners or with your friends, so many things. It's just so important for you to, like Em said, know what it is that you need, look to yourself for it, and then don't be afraid to protect that and maintain that. It's so, so important. We've done an entire episode already on boundaries. We're probably due to re-record that one pretty soon because it comes up so often. But yeah, boundaries, huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Stay tuned for our Broadway number. If anyone has a connection to like Lin-Manuel Miranda or someone,
Don't even get me excited.
All right. Our next one here is to stay grateful and stay mindful of the wonderful things in your life.
This is a big one that you enjoy.
I do. And I actually have more things to say about this because I was just taking more of my class about positive psychology. So as we said in a previous episode, gratitude is scientifically proven to bring you more happiness and fulfillment in your life. I think actually the wording that they would use in positive psychology is not happiness, but well-being is the word that they like to use. The great analogy that was made in the lecture that I was listening to today was that I think people get a little confused about saying it's all about being happier all the time. And he's like, that's somewhat absurd. It would be like if we trained a dog to just wag its tail all the time.
Well, that wouldn't, almost does.
That wouldn't be very useful because then we would never know how it's actually feeling. We wouldn't know what's going on, how it's reacting differently to things. So it's not about being happy all the time, but it's about having a sense of well-being, which can look a lot of different ways, but overall means more positive things in your life, more positive feelings, less of the negative ones, and that this exercise, which I want to talk about for a second, is about, you know, being grateful and finding ways to maintain that gratitude in your life in a very practical way. Did you have something you wanted to add, Dedeker?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit confused about how this connects to sense of self, honestly.
I mean, I think it does just simply... no. I think it does because it's like, I don't know, because gratitude comes from within, and you can't like look to someone else for gratitude. You can't just be like, oh my God, I'm so grateful for that person, or that person like brings out the gratitude within me. But like gratitude is a choice. Just like having a sense of self is a choice to a degree.
Well,
and it's something one can cultivate, but I think it's also something that like you have to figure out for yourself. So I think all of these things just kind of fall under the umbrella of like how to figure out how to have a sense of self. And I think gratitude is huge in there because I can't be okay with my life unless I am grateful for the things that are around me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, Emily, that's exactly it, that with something like a sense of self, where we're kind of talking about the core of it is not putting all of your self-worth on another person, not getting all of your needs for like why I exist in this world and putting those on somebody else, that in terms of talking about steps of how to maintain a strong sense of self-worth, increasing your wellness in your life, increasing your well-being in your life, is absolutely a way to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's always been the big one for me, is to not just like find my self-worth in another human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I used to have a lot of really codependent relationships, because like I would get so wrapped up in them that nothing would be about me anymore in any way of like any healthiness, any boundaries, anything. So
yeah. So just real quick, this gratitude exercise, I know we talked about it before, but it's sometimes called the three blessings exercise or the three good things exercise. And it's just very simple. It's just every night before you go to bed, write down three good things that happened today and why. So this isn't just like, I'm grateful because everything's great. It's like, no, what are actual concrete good things that happened today and why did they happen? And that's it. That's all it is. And this has been shown over and over again to be, you know, proven to have long-lasting positive effects, especially as you keep doing it, because it is also highly addictive to do it, because mm-hmm. it's just nice to do.
Yeah.
It feels good to do.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, okay, how to maintain a strong sense of self within relationships? One of the other things that you can do is do not neglect things like personal health for the sake of the relationship. I know like sometimes I've definitely had friends who say like, oh, I'm in a relationship, like I can just let myself go now. And that, I mean, mm-hmm. that doesn't make you feel great. I think obviously it can happen and it's okay and understandable. But if you can maintain healthy habits, such as a mindfulness practice or healthy eating, healthy exercising, then they'll make you feel sexier and better in the long run.
It's like wrapped up in that whole thing about like, you know, putting on marriage weight or like letting yourself go. And usually it focuses around weight and kind of conventional beauty standards.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, the underlying belief for all of that is that the only reason why you were doing it was for other people.
Yeah. And it's like, nah,
interesting.
It'd be sexy for you, man.
Right.
Because it makes you feel good.
Whatever that looks like, right? Whatever that wellness is for you, do it for you and not for somebody else.
Yeah. Even if that's just meditating or whatever, it's all awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So like still maintaining a sense of wanting to take care of yourself, I suppose, mm-hmm. not just relying on your partner to do that for you.
Yeah.
I feel like the burden's fallen on my shoulders to kind of end this episode on a really big inspiring note.
Inspire us. Go.
Just live your truth, man. chase your bliss.
Nice.
No, really though. I mean, this idea of like living your truth, speaking your truth. I think it's just that. I think it's just like not being afraid to be yourself. And of course, I think the best relationships are the ones where both the person that we're with helps us become a better person and also enables us to be ourselves at the same time. It's kind of that weird paradoxical thing. But I think more often than not, I think it's more important for people to know that, like, you know, being true to yourself, whatever that means for you, is going to be the thing that keeps you going for the longest amount of time. Because if you think about it, like, you're going to be in a relationship with yourself till the day you die.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship you're in right now, maybe it'll last that long, maybe it won't, maybe it'll be less. And so I think that that's why it's important to make sure that you're maintaining a good relationship with yourself and that you're being true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, continuing to take care of yourself, continuing to honor yourself, respect your own decisions, you know, continuing to carve out the life that you want, take care of yourself in the way that you want. And that's going to make you the best possible partner and have the best possible relationships. And I mean, this is such a broad topic, obviously. Like, we spent a whole 2 episodes covering this topic of inspiring relationships.
We only scratched the surface.
And we only scratched the surface. You know, of course, these things always take balance. You know that it's important to balance between autonomy and also having intimacy, you know, and having intimacy and also having desire for a partner. And just because one arena is not feeling so great, it doesn't mean that you have to throw the whole thing out. It just means you know what to work on and what to improve. You know, it's always going to be a back and forth. It's always going to be a negotiation. It's always going to be a journey for you and for all your partners, figuring out what's the best way that we can be human beings together for the time that we are together.
Yeah.
There. Was that inspiring enough?
Yeah. I think the most inspiring relationships are those that are balanced, that take like a little bit from each of these and, you know, mm-hmm. make them work for you in whatever relationship or relationships you are in. So go out there and be inspiring is what we're saying.
Because
it's difficult. It's difficult to find that in this world right now. amongst our friends, amongst ourselves. I think it's challenging, but it's something to aspire to.
But I will say, I actually do see a lot of, you know, maybe I don't know all the ins and outs of the relationship, but I see some really inspiring relationships even just within our Patreon group on Facebook that we have. Because to me, what's inspiring is people who are constantly working to be better, to be the best that they can be. And that I see a lot of that amongst the people, you know, who are our Patreon supporters and who are in that Facebook group, who are there because they want to always be learning and always be better. And especially when both them and their partners, you know, are all working together toward that is a really amazing thing. Like kind of the synergy that you can see with a company or a creative project, like how much more you can get done when you have a team working together on something, if you're working really well as a team, compared to just working on something by yourself. That having that and looking at that in a relationship is a really cool, really inspiring thing to see.
For sure. So if you'd like to have your question or comment played on the show, you can call 678-MULTI-05. We're here together so we can do that. And leave us a voicemail, or you can send us an audio message at the Multi Amory Facebook page. You can also email us at info@multiamory.com or send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. To support our show and join our private Facebook community, go to patreon.com/multiamory. Multi Amory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Jace Lindgren, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.